The man was feeling desperate. He had been driving for what felt like hours, and he was late. He couldn't find a parking spot. Losing hope, he ultimately cried out to God, "Help me, I'm late, this is becoming a disaster. If you do this one thing, I promise I will mend all my ways." Just then, as if by a miracle, he catches sight of a blinker, spies the turning of a wheel, and watches with astonishment as a car pulls out right in front of the building where he needs to be. Thrilled, he calls out again, "God! Never mind, I found one myself." God. What is God? Who is God? Does God even exist? Or perhaps, why do all these people keep talking about something that obviously doesn't? Those are some of the questions we might have about this word, this concept that plays such a role in the life of human society and has for such a long time. Whether or not you believe in a God who can find parking spaces or fix things for us, whether you've found yourself praying to something or someone in difficult moments simply for comfort and strength, or whether you utter the name of the holy only when you accidentally trip or hit your head or stub your toe, whatever we think and feel about God and God's existence or non-existence, as you use, we are open and welcome all. Part of our new mission is exactly this: to foster understanding and connection between people from all beliefs. Part of our mission is to create the condition in which whatever belief I hold or she holds or you hold can be seen, honored, held, respected, just as we respect each person who comes wanting to participate, learn, and grow. And while belief is sometimes framed as a yes or no, either or question, the life experiences that lead to them are not always straightforward, our faith journeys not entirely predictable. A couple of weeks ago, as part of the new UU orientation class, we all got to share the story of our religious upbringing. I recounted some key moments from my own growing up years, like the time my sixth grade Bible study teacher talked about the concept of faith. My family and I were living in South Korea at the time, and I was attending a Southern Baptist missionary school. Bible study was a required class, but pretty new to me. I didn't totally get it. I didn't always like it. Though mental slavery from our first reading would be an overstatement, I did feel a little strong-armed by it sometimes. And there were things, miracles and impossibilities, that just didn't make sense to me as a budding scientist engineer. And so I had questions, lots of questions for my teacher, particularly one day about this thing called faith. So I asked and I asked, and he paused and he thought, and then he responded that faith means not having to ask questions. Which is when my growing resistance and all those questions merged with my budding preteen rebellion and welled up as a gut-level, full-bodied, "What kind of fool do you take me for?" kind of feeling. Faith means not asking questions? That sounds like a simple way to get me to stop asking questions. It sounds like a sidestep designed to avoid critical reflection. It sounds like nonsense. Looking back, it feels like that was a key life turning point as part of my brain simply shut down against the whole religion thing. Right then and there, it just didn't make sense to me. Even as complicated as life is, at that same school, though with different teachers in a different place and at a later time, another part of me had a wholly separate kind of experience. I found something. I was at Bible study camp. All the cool kids went. It was fun. It was freeing. It included classes on frosting cakes and time to swim and leap off car tire swings and go for hikes in the mountains and sing my favorite Olivia Newton-John songs with my best friends. And there were moments where we could rest in the lull after all that activity and listen to some persuasive speakers sharing stories of courage and hope and redemption who helped us connect with each other and imagine how we might open our hearts to something that could change our whole outlook on life. It was a heady mix that I could not resist. And so I was born again. Amazing what personal experience can do to change one's mind. Now, being born again meant sharing the message, so I dutifully set out to convert my parents and my brother and sister with a similar passion that I had found for myself. And I discovered I wasn't able to convert my family's opinion on much of anything except their openness to being converted. I think my efforts only reinforced their dubiousness around the teachings I was trying so hard to promote with them. Seems they liked being strong-armed as little as I did. Soon after that, my family moved back to Europe. I tried a new church there. I went for a while and could not recapture the feeling. I stopped trying to convert them or anyone else, decided that religion didn't make all that much sense after all, and we all moved on. Still, looking back, maybe it seems almost predestined that I should become a UU because we've got both in our history, those who were rebellious against anyone who would tell us what to do or think or feel, and those who were as moved by what they'd found in their religion as any evangelical. You have your own religion or lack of religion story, I know, with its own twists and turns. Perhaps yours also includes feeling strong-armed or some personal rebellion. Maybe yours also includes moments of truth and connection. Either way, when we arrive at this church, one thing many have clarity about is what we don't believe. We may not know what's ultimately true, but we know what we've rejected. We, as UUs on the whole, prioritize education, reason, and science, and we know what does not make sense to us. And in that way, too, we are part of a long line of Unitarian Universalists who left the larger Christian denomination that was promoting ideas in which they no longer believed. Our forebearers said, "We're not sure that God is a Trinity. We're not so sure that God would punish us with this thing called hell. And we're not so sure that all these miracles in the Bible really happened. In fact, we're not even all entirely sure there is even a God out there." And so we split off from the mainstream religion of the day, along with countless others, as part of a much larger phenomenon that actually began about 500 years ago in 1517. That's when Martin Luther nailed 95 theses to a church door and kicked off the Protestant Reformation. When Christians everywhere began to define themselves one against another, peeling off from their original Catholic faith. First, Lutherans, Calvinists, Anglicans, then Baptists, Congregationalists, Methodists, later Pentecostals, the Adventists, Mennonites. It was a time that kicked off a division and a splitting and a division and a splitting, so that depending on how you define it, there are now somewhere between 10 and 33,000 denominations in the world, and that's just Christian denominations. There are a lot of ways to understand religion out there, and a lot of people who believe very strongly that theirs is the right way, that theirs is the best way. That's why they split off in the first place. That's why we split off. We actually no longer, as a denomination, identify as a Christian denomination. And in an irony of life, while there are so many belief systems that you use easily embrace, Christian ideas and practices can be among the harder ones, bringing for us our misgivings, our dubiousness, our skepticism. And when you add into the mix that there are Christian denominations, like our evangelical cousins, that appear to be heading 180 degrees in the opposite direction, whose focus, unlike ours, is not so much on science, logic, and reason, but more on experiences of the holy, When you realize that we and they tend to be on very different sides of the political spectrum, you see where some of the challenges lie. That's just one example. There are today so many divergent ways of understanding life and the world. Such different philosophies in theology and politics. And there is, echoing that Bertrand Russell reading, great and passionate argument possible in all of it. On every side, we see it all around us, lots of passion. And as today facts and knowledge and answers become submerged in overwhelming flows of information and misinformation, as trust in universal truths continues to wane, as all viewpoints are more and more being seen as simply relative to all others, it becomes increasingly clear that just having knowledge or the facts is not enough to bring people together around just, fair, life-preserving, and life-enhancing policies. And so our second reading comes to mind. I know a lot, Jan read, but I have so few answers. Fewer and fewer all the time. And the questions themselves get more convoluted, more subtle and cunning. We do know a lot, and there is so much we do not know. About the big questions about God and religion, or big questions about how to create jobs, or big questions about how to resolve the innumerable differences between innumerable groups who have strong convictions about their individual points of view. Or even just how to welcome all faiths, really welcome all faiths in this place, in our own hearts. As I was washing dishes the other day, thinking about all of this, about the magnitude of the challenges in our world, as well as pressuring myself about a long list of things that I needed to get done that day, an Einstein quote popped into my head. A problem can't be solved at the same level of consciousness that created it. My pressured frame of mind was not likely to create new solutions. Limited thinking creates limiting solutions. And some problems need a totally different approach. Don't yield to formulas or knowledge or simple logic. Can't be solved by working harder or faster or smarter with more pressured thinking, better arguments, or more facts or knowledge. There was an article in The Economist magazine about quantum physics a couple of weeks ago, and bear with me. It's not every day you hear a sermon about quantum physics, but hold on. This article talked about how the science of quantum physics is maturing and evolving practical uses, and about the fact that we now know that some absolutely impossible things are real, like that subatomic particles can be both here and there at the same time. It's called here-there-ness. That's right, that's my reaction too. It's an appropriately nonsensical name for an illogical phenomenon in an otherwise very logical field. It also talked about how certain subatomic particles can be connected to others such that even at huge distances, one impacts the other, and that is called entanglement. There is a theory that every 500 years, there is a major shift in religion, a consciousness shift. The last one began in 1517 with Martin Luther, the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, with all that separating and differentiating and aligning around our differences. This year is 2017, so 500 years ago, exactly in October, we are due for another shift right about now. What if this shift is a quantum one? Not one that proves through simple facts what is true and what is not, or through straightforward logic, I am right and you are wrong. But what if this is about a new way of connecting that, like the here-there-ness of the atom, includes some right-wrongness? some larger, impossible paradox that nevertheless holds us all. A paradox that has room for your beliefs and mine and theirs, and even though they do not match, there's something to all of them, or more important, there's something, a very important something, to each person who holds that belief. It makes me wonder if the ways I am sometimes unable to really see another is part of what creates an entangling dynamic in which that other or others feel unseen, and alienated and split off. Or when I see something I don't like in someone or a group and I deny their full humanity, even if just in my own mind. And if I do that with others in large movements, might that be part of what causes another to be able to see less clearly themselves? 500 years ago, and in that period since then, people were living in a time when there was a need to pull apart. There needed to be corrections to abuses of the church, and people needed to self-differentiate, escape groupthink, needed to engage mind as well as heart. And we, UUs, have been an important part of that. And we now are living in a time when there is a need to come together. And we can be an important part of that. I wonder what happens when our focus among different groups and theologies is less on skeptical questioning and more on open-hearted wondering, less on pulling apart, more on weaving together. For years, I took my teacher's response to my faith question as proof that he was foolish or close-minded or both. Only recently have I begun to wonder whether it wasn't nonsense, whether he was actually trying to help me see something about my own state of mind to which I had been previously completely oblivious. Maybe he could tell I was looking for holes, and maybe because I was looking, I would find them. Maybe he could tell that my questioning was not of the curious, but rather of the skeptical kind, and maybe he could tell that my state of mind was cutting me off rather than opening me up. Maybe he wanted to help me find a way into a new understanding and a different experience, and I didn't realize it. I used to think that I knew a lot. These days, once in a while, I realize that what I do not know massively eclipses what I do. But even as I or we may be less able to rely on facts and knowledge to guide our world, maybe we can trust our unfolding experience. And maybe rather than giving my own beliefs about what is or isn't true the power to separate me from others, perhaps I can allow my experience to shape a larger, growing understanding. Maybe it's that space in between the facts, in between logic, beyond our current reason, where we simply need, find, and can offer something much simpler and always available on another plane of consciousness. Maybe that is where we find love. Sometimes our reading said, my footing isn't so sure. Sometimes my map crumples into powder at my feet. And on those days, I don't need answers. I don't even need the questions. What I need is a squeeze of my hand, a shoulder on which to lean, a voice that says, we'll do it together. Just be there, oh precious love, whenever I am not strong enough to admit I am not strong. Be there. Hold me. And then walk with me all the way home. May it be so. Amen.